show. If it's Wednesday night, it's time for Race Trackers. Last week at Saratoga, saw Gunrunner easily handle the Whitney Field, and he did so with five horseshoes. He's now clearly at least the second best older horse in the country, behind the suddenly mortal Arrogant. We also saw the Saratoga yearling sales, and one of our faithful listeners hit the pick six for $41,000. On a personal note, I had about as much fun as legally possible last weekend at Saratoga, and I highly recommend it. This week, Saratoga has its lost weekend, and most attention turns to the second city, Chicago, where the Arlington Million is run Saturday with a spectacular undercard. I'm Bill Gottemer with my co-host, Mike Monroe. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Wednesday night. As I said, this week I'm proud to be joined by Mike Monroe as my co-host. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Bill. Good evening. How are you this evening?
Good. It's a big week up there last week. A lot of activity, and I guess everything has to start and begin with Gunrunner.
Yeah, very impressive victory in the Whitney. You know, looked great doing it, and was well within himself. So I guess he's going to move on, and you know, I guess he'll hook Arrogant again. Look forward to that.
Yeah, it wasn't the strongest field in the world, and I guess the rabbit that was in the race didn't really do his job, or didn't do it effectively, I guess. And Gunrunner sat behind him and stalked, and then. Put the race away with the third quarter being in 23 flat, which was tremendously impressive. That's when he moved past the pace setter and set out for the lead.
Yep, it was very impressive. But I think the so-called rabbit was the best thing that could happen to Gunrunner the way the race set up, because no one else went to the lead to challenge. So the pace was. Was very much in Gunrunner's favorite, and you know, heady ride by Florence Giroux aboard Gunrunner, and you know, I'm glad. A nice way for Steve Asmus to get off the duck at Saratoga by winning the Whitney.
Yeah, it is surprising that the Steve Asmus barn is as cold as it is, and I guess I'm sure they breathed a sigh of relief getting the win in the big race there. Let's talk about the concept. You touched upon it, but for our listeners who might not know, the concept of a target. And sometimes front runners do a little bit better when there's someone ahead of them, and they have a target to run at. It seems to relax them a little bit, correct?
Absolutely, Bill. Absolutely. And that's exactly what happened in this circumstance. You just hit the nail on the head. It actually aided Gunrunner because he was able to relax. Had a perfect trip on the outside. I thought Turco Bravo would press the Corderolo horse on the lead, and I was totally wrong when Irad Ortiz broke so well and took a hold of him.
Yeah, I guess the speed he had shown at longer distances just didn't translate into enough speed to keep up with Gunrunner going a mile and an eighth. What were your thoughts about how Gunrunner finished? I mean, he finished well enough. He won easy enough. I don't know if it inspired any confidence that he wants to go an extra eighth of a mile, though. Did you view it that way?
Not at all, Bill. I think he was well within himself. You know, like you said, he put the field away, so, you know, he really didn't have much to do. And like you said, for the Whitney handicap, $1.2 million purse, it was a very lackluster field except for the winner. And Keen Ice ran a great race also. I have to say, Keen Ice, who was up against it, you know, with the pace, he came on to run a good second. And he's been firing every time, and Todd's done a great job with him too. You know, I thought the race was going to set up better for Keen Ice than it was Gunrunner, if you actually looked on the racing form and heard everything about the so-called rabbit, and especially when Paco Lopez, they changed the jockey to Paco Lopez. I figured, wow, he's definitely going to be gunning out there, and it just didn't work that way. So I have to say Keen Ice ran a big race also, Bill.
I thought Keen Ice ran a very big race, and I sat next to Jerry Crawford from Donegal Stable, and he pointed out, he was disgusted immediately after the race, and he pointed out, I had not seen it from where I was, but how badly Keen Ice stumbled coming out of the gate. And I don't know whether you saw that or not, but he stumbled down to his, you know, went down to his face. And, you know, while it didn't, he was going to be last anyway, it certainly never helps when you wind up spotting the field a couple of lengths.
Absolutely. I don't think he would have beat Gunrunner, but it might have been a little bit closer. but I don't think anybody was beating Gunrunner that day.
The other thing with Keen Ice right now is he seems, under Jose Ortiz, he seems to be more willing to exert himself early in the race and stay closer to the pace. So when he makes that run, it's not from way back where it had been after the Preakness and before his Suburban win. Staying a little closer helps Keen Ice. So he may be a factor yet again, you know, before the year is out.
Absolutely. Always liked him. He seems to run a big race, and he has an affinity for the Saratoga course.
Right. Of course, that was the spot of his biggest victory. I mean, he's off to stud one way or another at the end of the year. And as Jerry said, they may stick around for the Pegasus, and there's probably a lot of money to be made by a horse like him who gets good and can pick up some big checks even with efforts that aren't winning ones. Let's talk a little bit about the fifth shoe on Gunrunner for some of our listeners who didn't follow that. Tell us about that.
Oh, that was wild. I mean, when I heard it after the race, I had no idea what they were talking about. And then when I read about it, I just couldn't believe it. Bill, what were your thoughts on it?
Well, you know, I didn't see it. Someone pointed it out to me when the horse was walking back to the stable, and Scott Blasi actually tossed the horseshoe into the crowd. Now, for our listeners who didn't follow what happened, it's not uncommon for a horse to throw a shoe, which means to lose a shoe during a race. You know, depending upon how they step and how their feet lands, you can dislodge a shoe, and for the most part, it doesn't. It doesn't harm their performance. I mean, of course, you want to protect the horse's foot, but it's not like running without a shoe causes any particular trouble. And the Cautious Giant, who's the horse we spoke about who was on the lead for Anthony Corderolo, he apparently threw a shoe with about, a mile to go. And the shoe came off his hind hoof, flipped up into the air, bounced off his hindquarters, and bounced on next to up in the air again, and landed in Gunrunner's tail. So Gunrunner went around the track with four shoes on his feet and one shoe stuck in his tail, which five shoes is somewhat unusual. Three is unusual, but five shoes is really unusual. So, and I guess Scott Blasi thought it was one of Gunrunner's shoes, and he tossed it to somebody in the crowd, but then when he realized it was such an unusual event, I think he went back and bought it back from the kid in the crowd who had collected it. But
you would be amazed how many horses throw shoes on a daily basis, even training in the morning and running in the afternoon. I mean, the number is astounding.
Yeah, it's just, and I don't think. I mean, no trainer wants a horse to throw a shoe, but I don't think it really explains a bad performance. It's just something that you know, it's a protective measure, and it probably hurts your traction a little bit, but it's not as uncommon as people would think. I guess Cash Asmussen, who is former jockey and Steve Asmussen's brother, trainer Steve Asmussen's brother, commented that's the fastest that shoe has ever gone, you know, transporting from Cautious Giant to transitioning from Cautious Giant to Gunrunner. So that's pretty funny.
Absolutely, and for him to come back with it on, it's amazing. It's just an amazing story, and another historical moment at Saratoga.
Yeah, and I guess it does show how dangerous it is. I mean, getting hit by a shoe is no bargain. One of the riders who are trailing, but I guess a few laughs about the shoe drama. The rest of the card unfolded a little bit the way we thought. You know, Delta Prince, the full brother to Royal Delta, was very impressive winning a grass race, a very short price, but nonetheless very impressive for Jimmy Jerkins. And he'll probably move on to some sort of stakes race, I would think, now, right?
Oh, absolutely. He was the most deserving favorite other than Gunrunner of the day, and he ran to it. He just had a perfect trip under Johnny Velasquez, and just ran away and hid from them.
Yeah, he's really never run a bad race on the grass now, so he's a solid racehorse and probably only getting better. I mean, this race was his most professional effort to date. He was a little bit green in some of his other efforts, but this effort, I thought, he put it all together, and he probably won with a lot left in the tank. On the flip side of that, Motown came back in the last race for Tony Dutrow and disappointed again. I don't really know what's with Motown. I'm not sure, you know, what to make of it, and I'm sure they're disappointed.
Bill, I couldn't believe it. I just such a lackluster effort on his behalf. Neolithic ran a huge race, you know, into slow fractions and came running at the end. But I was looking for Motown too, and he took all kinds of money, and he just didn't fire.
Yeah. This, I don't know. They've gone back to the drawing board a couple of times, but they may have to go back one more time. And Neolithic disappointed me because I bet the 26-1 shot who was second, and if Neolithic would just come up a little bit short, that would have been a nice hit for me. But
Lucas Horse that you bet on ran his eyeballs out.
Right. Well, that's a handicapping angle I've stumbled upon now, and we touched upon it a little bit on the show last week, and it has come to fruition a couple of times. It seems that this new surface at Saratoga must be very similar to Churchill Downs, or for whatever reason, it benefits horses who are shipping in from Churchill. All the horses shipping in from Churchill are running huge races, and some of them at some big prices. And that horse, that Lucas horse in the last race Saturday, was no exception.
No, I thought he was a winner, and he should have been unsaddled. There's a tough beat for all those who had the Lucas horse, you know, you being one of them. I definitely thought he was a winner, turning for home. But you're exactly right. Even if you look at some of the trainers, Al Stahl, 35%. Ron Moquette won another race today. And these are guys who were struggling the last couple of years. So this statement about the track being comparable to Churchill is almost not even a statement, Bill. It's becoming a fact, and the numbers are showing. The Kentucky trainers are shipping in, and their horses are running well.
Right. And somebody may correct me. I mean, we may have somebody say it's completely different, and it may be different. But for whatever reason it is, it's being very kind to Churchill Downs runners, even if it's different than the surface of Churchill Downs. You know, horses who've made their last start at Churchill or have run at Churchill this year are doing extremely well. And that's just a handicapping angle to keep in mind. I want to talk about a couple. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just want to make one point in regards to what you said about the Churchill surface and being comparable to the Saratoga surface. An old handicapping angle, as you even used with Saturday, was one is if you look back years in Saratoga, horses that ran well over the inner dirt track at Aqueduct also had a fondness for the Saratoga main track. So it's not so much a fallacy. It might be a different surface, but the Churchill horses are definitely taking to it. So I'm not saying it's totally comparable, but I'm just saying that those horses are liking the feel of the track in Saratoga as they did their track in Churchill. And I think you have a valid point.
Yeah, we'll see whether that continues. You know, I want to get back to the track service and some disappointing things or some disturbing things in a minute. But we should mention one more disappointing effort. Mo Heyman ran terribly on Sunday, and again another horse that they went back to the drawing board with, and he's just never been the same after the Florida Derby when he lost to Nyquist. And you know, I don't know what it is, and I'm sure Kieran McLaughlin is tearing his hair out trying to figure out what it is. They sent him back to Kentucky. I don't know whether they'll try again with him or whether they'll send him to stud. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Kieran when we see him. About what he feels and if there's any issues with him. But we'll have to check with Kieran on that. I mean, he was a talented racehorse, and you know, he just seemed to be going the wrong way, as so many of those 3-year-olds did that year, Bill.
Yeah, I guess that year was more than most, but the grind of getting ready for the Triple Crown, you know, takes its toll on horses. We're seeing that this year with all the classic winners not so far coming back to their best form. You know, I watched that race with Mo Heyman on the backstretch, and for people who've never done that, it's a very cool place to watch the races. You watch the races not on the stretch side, but on the backstretch side, and I think you need to be invited in or you need to have ownership badge, but it's a little bit like a it's a little bit like a country fair. People watch the races in folding chairs, and there's a few betting windows, but not very many amenities. That's mostly backstretch helpers and workers. But you really get to see it and hear it. And Mohamed passed right by me, and he wasn't putting out any effort at all with you know, 6 furlongs to go at a mile and an eighth. And whatever's going on there, I think he's just kind of, you know, has lost his competitiveness.
It's a shame that some of these horses just tailed off at the wrong times. But if anyone can get him back to himself, it's Kieran McLaughlin.
Yeah, but I guess with Godolphin, the horse is worth so much money, I don't think they'll embarrass the horse, but we'll have to wait and see. Speaking about being in the backstretch, I didn't go to the races on Sunday. I had an absolutely delightful time with a lot of friends, and I had the best time with some people who were just tremendous and great friends and just an awful lot of fun and delightful in every way possible. And we watched the race from back in the backstretch because it was just too much after being at the races Friday and Saturday. So we enjoyed a brunch and then watched some races from back there before heading home. But one of the things that was disturbing, in front of the racetrack on Union Avenue side, there were demonstrators against horse racing. And I don't know if it was PETA, the People of Ethical Treatment of Animals. It didn't look as organized as that. But there were maybe 15 or 20 people there who were holding signs protesting against horse racing. And you know, that always hurts when you see that, because you and I love the game, and we know for the most part the vast majority of how well horses are treated. But you know, the fatalities that have taken place at Saratoga this year are really disturbing.
A lot, Bill. Not only racing, but training.
Yeah, I don't know what the final number is. It was 8 at one point. But, you know, Sunday, the last race on Sunday, while the protesters were there, they had another fatal breakdown in the last race. And as I said, I was driving home at that point. And, you know, it continues to be a problem. And I know they changed the track for the track to be safer. But maybe it's more tiring. I guess some of the fatalities have been cardiac events as opposed to leg breakdowns. But either way, you can't have animals losing their lives every other day and call the meet a success.
No, exactly, Bill. It's a catch 22, as the phrase goes. As good as it is, there's unfortunately a dark side to it, and no one likes to see that curtain go up when they have to put one of these tremendous athletes down. It's disheartening, and you know, especially if you're there to enjoy the day of the races, and that's the last thing you want to see. But you know, unfortunately, it can happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when they had the rash of breakdowns a few years ago, that got so much negative publicity and spawned so many reforms, and really made equine safety a top priority. The conventional wisdom was it was aqueduct, it was the inner track, it was tough conditions, it was cheap horses, and that had something to do with it. Now you're at the premier meet of the showcase meet of the entire, certainly of the New York racing season, and arguably of the country's racing season, and you still have these problems, and I'm a little disappointed that there hasn't been a statement, you know, as you know, the Brooklyn Cowboy said on Twitter, and you know, I agree with him, how many do you have before it's officially a thing? And you know, everybody keeps saying no problem, it's not the track surface, but it's something, and I don't know what I'm suggesting, but it's so disturbing and so disheartening, you know.
It's one of the worst feelings in the world. You know, for a trainer, an owner, an exercise rider, a jockey, a groom, when that happens, you know, every time they come out of the stall, unfortunately, they're very fragile animals and you know, high-strung animals. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it could happen. You know, like you said, sometimes there's cardiac problems involved. I mean, you don't know, you know, sometimes until they go out there and perform. But it's a any way, shape, or form, it's a disheartening thing, and it's very tough. But for the people that protest against the game and think there's not, I've seen grooms cry, I've seen trainers cry, I've seen riders cry, you know, exercise boys. I mean, these animals are loved and they're treated with the utmost respect. They're treated like children. I mean, I'm there every day. I know how these animals are treated. These animals are treated, you know, they're very expensive athletes, and they're very expensive. They're pets to a lot of these people. And trust me, a lot of these animals are treated, you know, like you could have them in your backyard. It's not a cruelty thing as far as how they're treated or how they're fed and how they're trained. You know, it's just an unfortunate outcome sometimes, which happens, and that's the bottom line.
Right. No, I agree. But you've said it more eloquently than most, and I have I've talked more about it now, it seems, than anybody. You and I have talked more about it on the show now than the authorities have spoken about it, and that's disturbing. I mean, even if you're saying what the obvious is, which is I agree with you 100% that everybody wants the horses to have the best welfare. You know, somebody has to speak out and address it. Somebody who's the racetrack superintendent has to say we've taken some measures, or somebody has to just acknowledge it. I mean, as I said, I was with some people who were just beautiful people inside and out, and we walked past those signs, and they said, wow, you know, what are they talking about? And when I had to explain that, you know, horses occasionally break down, I think the idea was occasionally was maybe one or two a meet, not one or two a week. And so something has to be addressed as far as that goes. And I don't know what the answer is, but even if it's just an expression of sorrow and condolences, something has to be said, because you know, you can't go through. It's an existential threat to the game if horses continue to break down. And that's, you know, I've said that a number of times, and I think that's right. But
I agree, Bill, 100%. And it's also the side of, you know, with this being in mind, less and less people might get involved in owning these fine animals, and that's really not the way it should be, because it's a great game. It's the sport of kings. It can happen anytime. It can happen to a professional athlete. You know, they could go down. They could, you know, they could break a leg. They could, you know, unfortunately, you know, we've seen football players, you know, paralysis. You know,
right.
You know, anything can happen when they go out there. These jockeys, like we've said many times, Bill, and this show says it all the time, it's the only sport in the world where you're being followed by an ambulance 9 or 10 or 11 times a day.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. An ambulance follows you because it's that dangerous. And to keep in perspective, you know, the reason there are 35,000 thoroughbreds born in this country each year or so, I don't know what the exact foal count was, 28,000, 30,000. At its height, it was probably 40,000. But the reason that those animals exist is because the racing game, they support the racing game, and the racing game supports them. So, you know, you don't want horses to become something that are extinct, because there's no real need for them any longer. You don't want to have to visit them in the zoo. They're beautiful, majestic animals. So I'm not picking on the game. I just wish there was some spokesman who would come out and say that it matters, and say that steps are being taken. And I kind of understand the fact that you're hoping that they're isolated incidents, and you hope that they've stopped. But it was a bad juxtaposition to have new people in the game, see those protesters, and then, you know, sure as hell, 4 hours later, you know, what the protesters predicted happened. And that was just
right, Bill. But Bill, on the other side, like you said, we're on this show because we love the game, we love the animal, we love the sport. That's why we're on this show. That's why we have people calling into this show. It's the love of the sport. Nothing is perfect in this world. But like you said, if someone comes out and with a report and explains it, I mean, it could happen at any time. But, you know, the animal activists and the rights activists, they could do all they want, but you cannot knock horse racing. It's a great sport. It, you could see all these families coming together. I mean, not just people that are dedicated horse players, but people that come together to enjoy a day at the races. For the 20 people outside, there's 30,000 people inside that are enjoying themselves. Whether you're winning, losing, or just spending time with your family, having a couple of drinks, the kids in the park, I mean, watching these fine animals. I mean, you know, you go to Saratoga in the morning, you'll see a bunch of people having breakfast, watching these horses train. The stands are full just in the mornings before races, watching these fine animals train, because people are coming out. The backstretch trips, you know, around. So, you know, you know, out of the bad, you know, always brings good. And, you know, like you said, if there's a way we could just, you know, just clarify this or see what, you know, what's going on, or try and get to the bottom of it, at least we're trying to do something to keep the game going the way it should be, and that's to enjoy it, and that's to keep it the sport of kings.
No, I agree. Let's pick on one other thing that was annoying, and we're going to start tonight with a new segment, I think, and this is kind of off the cuff, but we're declaring on this show, I'm declaring, that the two cards of national interest this week during the day are Saratoga and Arlington Park with the Arlington Million. Now, that's pretty obvious. It's obvious to you, and it's obvious to most horse fans, so I'm not saying anything I don't know, but it might be somehow officially declare it so they don't run the big races at exactly the same time. And I don't, they continue to do it, and I understand how hard it is to coordinate things, but still, the West Virginia Derby and the Whitney went off at literally exactly the same time. And you almost couldn't do that if you tried. And it begs the question whether or not people actually tried to do that. I don't know. I mean, how annoying was that?
Well, I think it was totally annoying, and especially what if you're Todd Pletcher or Jorge Navarro, who had horses in both races. You're watching one on your phone, and you're watching the other one live, or you're watching one on a closed-circuit TV, and you're watching the other one live. I mean, even these two trainers who had horses in both races weren't able to focus, each race separately.
Right. You know, we've spoken about a national commissioner, and that's never going to happen in our lifetime. But there could be a little consideration for people who love the game and want to watch both of them. And I don't know whether I know scheduling is difficult, and I know television is difficult, and I'm not making it easy. But there should be some effort, or at least some. If efforts fail to run them at different times, at least an apology should be issued to fans. And you know,
even,
this week you're going to have
not only the fans, but the hardcore horse player who's gambling, and sometimes they're pretty big gamblers. They shouldn't have to be looking with the left eye to the West Virginia Derby and the right eye to the Whitney. It makes absolutely no sense.
Right. Right, and I guess, you know, people do. I mean, people say, oh, it's more complicated than you think, and I understand that, and I feel for that. But we've all done some pretty complicated things in our lives. I mean, in our work.
Exactly.
Lives. And it's worth the effort to try. And if you fail, you say, I'm sorry, I failed. But at least you acknowledge that it was something that you were trying to do. So this week we have the Arlington Million, and I guess we have the Four Star Dave. I hope they don't run right on top of each other. So if anybody is listening, you know, at NIRA or at Arlington International, you know, please try to space those a little bit so that horse fans who care about it can and gamblers can watch and play both. I mean, I know it's always said, well, there's a million tracks around the country, but I think this Saturday in the afternoon there's really only two that matter for national interest,
and right.
that's going to be Saratoga and Arlington International. We deviated from our thing here. We didn't thank our guest last week. For our guest last week, Ricardo Santana, you know, was a tremendous guest, a nice guest, and I got an opportunity to introduce myself to him personally in the paddock. He rode one of Paradise Farms horses when we get up there Friday, and so we thank him for that. And you know, that was Mike. I thank you for helping us get him on the show.
Absolutely,
and
my pleasure.
You know, and this week we're going to have David Donk in a few minutes, and we'll talk to David and hopefully get his take on a lot of things. He's always top notch at Saratoga, and he's having dinner, so we'll give him a few minutes to time. We probably have time for a call if anybody wants to call in. It's 646-716-4442. Mike, I didn't pay much attention to the racing at Saratoga this week. Some of my smarter friends refer to this as the lost weekend. It's a weekend where there's no real big stakes race. The Four Star Dave is a nice race, but it's not great. I focused mostly on the Arlington card. And let's talk about that in a minute. We do have a caller, so let's prepare to talk about
sure.
The three races in Arlington in a few minutes. Good evening. Welcome to Race Trackers.
Hello, it's David Donk. How are you?
Oh, hello, David. How are you? Thank you so much for calling. We were trying to give you some time. We know you were out to dinner, but thank you for calling in right at 8:30. Thank you.
No, it's my pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Well, David, you need no introduction to horse players around New York or horse players in America, in the United States, but we're going to do it anyway. You've had a tremendous long career. You're bumping up on $33 million in earnings. You've had a tremendously consistent career of stakes winners, particularly on the grass, and developing horses to go on and have long careers. You've had over 5,000 starts, and we as we predicted, you're having a beautiful Saratoga meet, so we welcome you to the show.
It's my pleasure, guys. It's been a lot of fun. Obviously, it's very good racing in Saratoga, very competitive. I'm just fortunate that it's gone as well as I have so far.
Well, David, you come to the game naturally, right? You come out of the Finger Lakes region, and I guess you, as a child, you grew up near Finger Lakes, and that's how your love of the game developed?
Yeah, as a kid, I grew up near a farm that had racehorses, and because of that, my dad got into it and owned and then bred some horses. And, you know, as a late teenager, for some reason, I decided that's what I was going to do. And, you know, I trained horses for 5 years at Finger Lakes, and in 1985, I got the biggest break that I could have gotten, and I had a mutual contact with someone that worked with Woody Stevens, and he was looking for an assistant trainer, and I gave up everything at home to go to work for Woody, and, you know, it was the biggest break I could have ever gotten.
Well, you know, we interviewed Mike Hushin on his retirement last week, and he said he had the opportunity to go work for Alan Jerkins, and he spoke about that as having the opportunity to go to Harvard. And I guess if Alan Jerkins was Harvard, getting the opportunity to work with Woody Stevens was going to Yale, I would assume, right?
Yeah, I always call it the Woody Stevens University. You know, it was obviously a great introduction, because coming from a small track, going to work for Woody, you know, I was 25 years old, and I knew at the time that I was working for a legend in his own time. And, you know, it's being exposed with very good clients, very good horses. I was there with the last two Belmonts of the run, the five Belmonts, so it's, you know, just something I'll never forget. And I was really comfortable working for him. I could have stayed there 20 years, but because of his age and his health, it came time for me to kind of got pushed to go out on my own, and picked up a couple clients, and was just very fortunate that I could stay in New York and you know, grow a stable. And it's been 32 years since I came to New York, so it's been a long time.
Right. Wow. You've been through so many changes in the game, but for all, sometimes we have some younger listeners who don't know. And, you know, Woody Stevens won five Belmont Stakes in a row, which is kind of mind-boggling. And those of us who were betting back then felt stupid every year when he won it, when we didn't bet it because we thought maybe the streak was over. I guess you were there with Creme Fraiche and Danzig Connection, and they were probably two of the lesser ones. And I guess Woody's ability to get a horse to go long and to train him that way has helped you. You've had great success with horses who go a distance of ground.
Yeah, we talk about the game has changed. And one of the biggest things that we've seen is that people don't run horses as much as they used to. Even, you know, we don't have to go back that far to 49er. You know, he ran in every stake in Florida. He went to Keeneland. He ran the Lafayette, the Lexington, and then the Derby. And, you know, now I think we have clients, I don't want to say they're brainwashed, but maybe, that people think they have to win every prep. So they're only going to run in two of them. Maybe if they run the three, it's a big deal. So it's a difficult task to run a mile and a quarter on the first Saturday in May. And are the horses really ready to stand up to it? And if they are, it's not very possible that they're going to win three races in 5 weeks. So I think that's the biggest difference we've seen. We don't run them as often. We're afraid to get them beat. And, you know, maybe they're not quite is ready for that ultimate goal. And obviously, Woody was very intelligent, and able to get a horse ready to run a mile and a half. Certainly did it 5 years in a row.
Right, just amazing. Well, you know, we spoke before you came on the show. Mike and I spoke of Keen Ice, and Keen Ice is a horse who the connections are not afraid to lose a race with, and with that, you know, he picks up some big checks running second and third, and he certainly is distance is no problem for him, and it is refreshing to see people who aren't afraid to lose, because you know the quest for perfection stops a lot of development. Mike, I don't want to block you out. And David, I'm sure you know. Dave, I'm sure you know Mike Monroe, my co-host on the show.
Very well, yes, Mike.
Yeah, we know David very well. He's like he said, came out of the Woody Stevens School and has done a fine job. You know, anybody who follows New York racing loves to see David donk on the grass, especially. And he had a 2-year-old that ran very well today on the grass, first time starter.
Yeah, he ran okay. I tell you, the winner was pretty impressive today in that race, Mike Builder's horse. So he probably comes out of a halfway decent race. He's okay. He's probably not going to go on to be a stake horse, but it was a really solid race. You know, he's a type of horse that has the pedigree to run the grass. He's by Data Link, who I think most of them are going to be grass like him. Loves a train long. So it's an instance where, if I didn't have a choice, he's ready to run, I would have run him 5.5. But I was quite happy to be able to go ahead and start him at 2 turns, and he'll obviously benefit. But, yeah, it was a very good race for him today.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we want to get back a little bit to the grass, because I don't remember Woody Stevens being as focused on grass racing as you are. I remember Terpsichorist was a big runner that he had on the grass.
Terpsichorist, yes.
Yeah, Terpsichorist, but I can't focus on too many. But Dave, you've found a niche on the grass, and do you find that just an easier way to keep them sound? Do you find that there's more opportunities going long on the grass than there is on the dirt, or what is really your philosophy on that?
Well, you know, a couple things. One, obviously, there's much more turf racing than we saw then. Remember, he had Saban. You know, he had a number of fillies that ran on the grass. So I don't think there was quite as many opportunities. You know, look at when the Danzigs got to the grass, you know, the Northern Dancer line. So I'll give you an example. In 1992, I had a Watt, and he was a 2-year-old. And he ran 3 times on the dirt, once at Belmont, twice at Saratoga. He got buried every time. The first grass race was not until September at Belmont, when we went back to Belmont. He was a big price, finished third, and he got beat by Sea Hero and Halisey in a maiden race. And the next time, the opportunity to run him, I ended up running him in the Pilgrim Stakes. And I didn't run him to especially think that he was going to win. I had another horse called Dr. Elfus, and I ended up running 1-2 in the Pilgrim, and a wad broke his maiden in the Pilgrim. But for me, most of the horses that I have are homebreds, inexpensively bought. It's very difficult to buy a nice dirt horse inexpensively, as we've seen it sell even the last couple of days. You know, when the market is high, it's very difficult for someone to buy horses with a lower budget. I've just been very fortunate to have horses that did run on the grass. I like to joke and say that if it wasn't for a grass course, I might have been driving a truck for UPS. So the grass course has been very good to me.
Yeah, it certainly has. You spoke, Mike. You know, Mike. I don't know. Is your radio on in the background? I'm getting some feedback, and I don't know if that's your.
Nope,
is your radio
not
on?
Me, no.
No, I don't know. It must be Blog Talk Radio. David, we do a pretty good job here on a pretty small budget, so we don't have any fancy TVG engineers coming in. So I apologize.
Oh, that's okay.
If there's any feedback, you spoke about a wad, and this week is the Arlington Million, and you won the Arlington Million with a wad, and I would probably one of the biggest wins of your career, and that must have been thrilling to be part of that pageantry that goes on out there in Arlington.
He actually almost won it back to back years, right, David?
Yeah, 95 and 96.
Yep,
I won it in 95. Eddie Maple rode him. Obviously a big point in my career because it was a $1 million race. So used a whole down payment to buy a house in Floral Park. So when you call the house, it's the house that a lot bought. So, you know, in 96, I got beat by Mecki, and Chris McCarron wrote him that year. And probably Chris moved a little bit too soon, and Mecki got last run on me. But he won the Secretariat as a three-year-old, and he loved Arlington. One of the most fabulous places to go to. Dick Duchossois is, you know, one of the greatest racing ambassadors that we've ever had. Treated, obviously, we were a little bit spoiled, treated the owners and trainers with unbelievable customer service, but not just us, all the fans, you know, beautiful facility. He really knew how to run a racetrack, and, you know, someday he's going to be sorely missed.
Well, it's a beautiful facility for anyone who hasn't been out there, and I guess those of us who've been around for a long time still think of it as new, but it's not really not new any longer. But when it was first built, it was just such a tremendous facility, and it's the state of Illinois racing is I guess precarious right now, and like a lot of places, but it's unfortunate, but it's not for lack of facilities. That facility is tremendous, and you know, the racing is always. The grass course is always good there, and you know, as you say, he's been a tremendous ambassador, and I hope somebody picks up the mantle when he is gone. But I tend to doubt it. David, we want to focus on how well you do at Saratoga. You do well at Saratoga every year, and I guess that's a set of circumstances. But it has to be something that you point to, because your record is so nice up at Saratoga all the time. Does that become the focus of your year?
Well, as I get older, not really. I'm a little more patient. I mean, I'm in New York year-round, so Saratoga is very difficult. It's humbled many trainers, owners, and jockeys. So even right now, I don't have the real good horses, but I have a lot of horses to run. Hopefully we can get some up in the right spots. And even the claiming races are very difficult. We have people shipping in and dropping horses. So, but it, you know, I've been pretty fortunate. I've got, you know, a few horses to run in the right spots, and you know, you got to get a little bit lucky, just like on a grass, you got to get the trip. So, you know, a little bit luck's involved. We'll take it. So, you know, like I said, so far it's gone quite well, and hopefully we get a couple more out there.
Yeah, well, you got half the meat to go, and of course you've heard the saying honk if you like donk, and you know, I guess you've heard all the sayings about it, you know, the grass is this time of year is any better who leaves your horses out does so at his peril, because they all run well right now. I want to talk a little bit, and Mike, you know this, but I want to talk a little bit for our listeners. Dave, you've really been a champion of backstretch workers all your career, and you've been involved in a lot of social service programs in the backstretch, and been involved in trying to make sure the working conditions are as good as they can be for the people who put in the long hours. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, listen, I think, you know, I try to instill in my own kids, don't forget where you came from. So don't forget where you started. So we all started as hot walkers and grooms. I'm very fortunate. I have a lot of great help. A lot of them have been with me a long time. And, you know, the backstretch community in New York is a community. It is a city. We're there year-round. So I think the kudos goes to the chaplain, Umberto, and his wife Karen, Nick Harris, the recreation director. They do tireless work. So I think the least I can do is to help support them, and whether it's financially or to help them get finance help. So, you know, I'm very happy to be a very, very small part of it, and, you know, to help out. But it's amazing the work that's done, and, you know, Mike can attest to it, everybody back there, all the activities year-round, and, you know, whether it's the holidays, parties and stuff, but, you know, they look after all age groups, single men, families, teenagers, small kids, you know, the Anna House is on the backside, you know, a fabulous facility, the best program, so... You know, credit goes to a lot of people, and it seems to grow and gets attention every year. And just like a simple thing like the basketball game between the jocks and the trainers, and, you know, that's put on by the chaplaincy, and it's become a very, very popular event, and it touches a lot of people and a lot of awareness.
Nah, it's great. Well, you know, Nick Karras has devoted his entire career to that. Nick and I worked together in the mutuals back in the late 70s. His father and my father worked together, and I don't know, Dave, if you know, his uncle was Costi Karras, who was the announcer at Pimlico many years ago.
So I did not know that. Wow.
Yes, Costi Karras. His name was Constantine, but he was known as Costi Karras, and he was, you know, he was a staple on the racetrack, and his father worked with mine. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that there is a community back there that lives there full time, and they need all the social service needs. There's not a lot of affluence among backstretch workers, and they need all the social service needs that any community would need, it's a blessing that they have people like you sticking up for them and Nick and Umberto, and just wanted to give that shout out to them for all the work that they do. And I guess we try to highlight on the show, and Mike does a good job of it, how many people are involved in getting a horse to the races safely and getting him home safely, as opposed to how many things can possibly go wrong, right?
Yeah, it encompasses a lot of people. We have basically having your own company. So, yeah, like I said, we're very fortunate. Being that it's a year-round facility, a lot of families there, and a lot of good help, and a lot of people that enjoy being around the horses.
Well, that's great. We just wanted to make sure you mentioned that. What have you found this surface at Saratoga to be as different as people are talking about from years prior? I guess you're mostly on the grass, but do you find the dirt surface to be as tiring as it appears to be?
Well, it is laboring. It is a new surface. I had a conversation last summer with Glenn Kozak about the track, and it had seemed that the material, the silt, was worn out, so they were going to put the material down. It was only put down a couple weeks before the meet, so, you know, that's maybe a bit of an issue, getting it to where it needs to be. But it is laboring. It looks like some horses run really well over it, and the rest don't, so... you're seeing winners win off by a lot on the dirt, and some of the rest of the field to struggle. But, I fortunately, it's gone okay for me, and I haven't had any issues. And I think you have to be careful when you train over it. But there's no question it's, pretty laboring racetrack, I think I'd label it as. And I don't see that it's going to change a whole lot before we get through this season. Maybe it needs time, but... It is a little bit different.
All right. Well, Mike and I have observed, and this is from nothing other than handicapping. So we're probably 100% wrong as far as track consistency. But it seems like horses who have run over Churchill Downs run very well over this. And maybe it's an optical illusion. Maybe the others are just running poorly. As you said, if they don't like it, they don't like it at all. But it seems like the Churchill Downs shippers seem to have a bit of an advantage on this course.
Well, it is a flip side from what in most years. So, listen, I'm sure there is some credence to that. And I think going forward for the rest of the meet, I think, as a gambler, you have to weigh that. So, and I would say you're wrong about that. Yeah.
Well, I know we're keeping you up past we're interrupting your dinner, so I hope you manage to have your dessert beforehand. And I know you'd like to have a shout out to some of your owners. You've had some owners that you've had for so many years, sometimes if you thank some of them, you risk leaving somebody out and offending someone. So I don't want to put you on the spot, but you've had a consistent group of owners for so many years, and what do you have now? Do you have about 25 or 30 horses in training now?
Well, I have about 45 in training. So,
okay.
I've got some people that own a single horse and, a bunch. So, yeah, I've had some clients for a long time. So, I think as time goes on, I appreciate the longevity of that. John Barron's been with me from the beginning, John and Charlie Marquis. Jim Ryan, I've had a lot. I have the odd horse for him now and then, and some Danny, from the beginning. And, Bob Spiegel and Bill Punk and Phil DeLeo for a long time. So, and then a bunch of other people that have come on board over the years, and some newer one the last few years. So, it's I have a good business model. I don't like that. I don't have the best horses, but it works for me, and I'm able to make a nice living doing it, and still have fun, and I want the clients to enjoy it also.
Dave, we know you have a.
I'm sorry, Mike.
No, I was going to say, Dave, you know, we always do. I know that David Dunk, I see him every morning. He's out there working hard, and hard work pays off in the game. And David, you know, you've developed a couple of really nice horses over the years, but you're out there working every day, and you deserve nothing but kudos from the fans and people that pay attention to this game. And with that, a perfect example is a horse maybe you could speak to us about a little bit. Is a horse tomorrow you run in the third race, Codrington. He was one of those horses I guess you gave a shot to on the dirt, didn't pan out. You put him on the grass and he ran a big third with a troublesome trip and he looks like he could be in a real good spot tomorrow stretching out for the first time.
Yeah, it's a filly just trained well. I kind of pigeonholed her as a grass horse to begin with, but when I ran the dirt, I thought she'd be useful. But boy, she didn't outrun me when I ran around the dirt. So, but I still liked her. I really wanted to run her long, and I didn't think we were going to have a route race until late in August, so I put her in the 5.5, knowing that it was probably too short for. Ran a good race, finished up well, but it's not an easy spot tomorrow. You know, I'm in there with, you know, one of Todd's and one of Chad, so it's a question of how good they are. But my filly will appreciate the two turns, and I just need to continue to move forward a bit. But, you know, she stands a chance. But like I said, those two other horses, it's a question of how good they are.
And their ability to go the distance also.
Yeah, and I'll get the distance, and I obviously have two races underneath me, so that's an advantage. You know, Chad's is a firster, but, you know, sometimes I've got a water pistol and I got a loaded gun. So,
as so many other trainers do, Dave.
Yeah, so, but it's okay. She'll run well, and the first money is very good. You know, I'm happy. If they hit the board, the owner's doing well, I'm doing well. So.
Bill, I know I never told you this story, Bill, but while we got Dave Dunk on the phone, I have to tell you this story. The year that Dave Dunk won the Arlington Million with a wad, about 2 weeks later, I got a UPS delivery. I'm sure Dave is going to remember now. And they accidentally delivered his trophy for the Arlington Million to my home. And my wife has called me and says, I didn't know that you owned a racehorse named Awad. I said, what are you talking about? She goes, you just got to win the winning trophy for the Arlington Million. I said, I better run that over to Dave Dunk's house as soon as I can. And if you remember, Dave, I brought it over to your house at the time. They had our addresses mixed up.
Yes. Well, you didn't know, Mike. You won the million in 95. So, yeah.
That's right.
It shows you how hard it is in this game. Even when you win, it's hard to get the trophy. They even sent it to the wrong place.
I got to tell you, Bill, it was a gorgeous trophy.
It was a good trophy, but I got the check. So, yeah.
That's right.
That's funny. You know, Dave, we don't normally do this, but we have a caller from a 551 area code. I don't know if he wants to ask you a question or if he wants to ask us a question. We'll let you go, but if you don't mind, maybe we'll patch him in if he has something nice to say about you, and if he doesn't, we'll cut him off and let you go. Is that okay?
Okay. That's fine. Sure.
Good evening. You're on Racetrackers with Mike Monroe and David Dunk.
Hey, Mike. Hey, hey David. Hey, how you guys doing tonight? This is Jay.
Hey, Jay, how are you?
Hey, Jay, how are you?
How you guys doing? All the best. Good luck tomorrow, David. And, I just want to know how's Lady Carita doing.
Well, unfortunately, I don't have him anymore. So they sent him to Linda this spring, and he's run a couple of times. He ran decent, and he'll probably run back in the West Point. But, unfortunately, he's not in my barn anymore, so.
Okay, well, unfortunately, somewhere down the line you'll get. Well, he did a good job with him.
Yeah, well, he's a really cool horse. Listen, Jeremiah did a great job with him early in his career. I was very fortunate to have him for three seasons. He's a really nice horse, I only wish him the best.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Jay, maybe we'll let David go. We're interrupting his dinner, and Jay, why don't you stay on and we'll talk a little bit about the topics that we've spoken about prior. And we'll get your feelings on the Arlington Million. So,
all right, guys.
David,
well, thank you very much.
Thanks, and please come back anytime. David Dock, everyone.
Take care, David. Have a good
guys.
Night.
I appreciate it. Okay, Mike. Thank you.
Okay, well, Jay, thanks for joining us.
Well, yeah, well,
how
Bill,
have you been, Jay?
Wanted,
have you made it up there?
I've made it up there, Bill. I sent you a note to try to see if we could link, but I don't think you were up there last weekend. But, like, congratulations on getting your booth set up for QuesterCon.
Oh, well, thank you. That's going to be next Monday. What Jay is referring to, and I've said on the show a number of times, that I'm going to be on a panel next Monday night, Mike, from 4 to 5:30. It's actually against the races, so I don't know. I'm not sure how well attended it'll be. I hope it'll be attended nicely. But I'm on a panel talking about debating the greats. So I'm trying to put together some thoughts as to some of the greatest things. I mean, obviously the secretariats of the world come to mind, but I'm trying to think of some of the best rides or some of the best training accomplishments. And actually, if either one of you want to give me your thoughts, I'll pass them along on the show.
Well, as an agent, like all I could say, Jay and Bill, as a Jack's agent all these years, the best ride I ever had with one of my riders was when I had Junior Alvarado's book, and he actually came out of the stirrup and almost over the horse's head, caught himself for a Bruce Brown horse. It actually made ESPN's 10 most hits for the week. He actually came out of the stirrup, looked like he was going to go off the horse, maintained, got back in the stirrup, and circled the field and went off in a hand ride. So that was one of my favorites as an agent. I had a lot of bad beats, but that was one of my best rides, one of the best rides I've ever been privy of watching.
Okay.
Okay, getting to the million. I think one of the tremendous, there was a couple of great millions. We could go back to the Tin Man. We could, of course, John Henry, that was a tremendous one. But the one that was really intriguing to me, when the Powers Court got taken down and then to come back the next year and avenge that was amazing, I thought. So, you know, Kieran Fallon, I think, lost the ride, and then Jamie Spencer might have been the one that rode. Yeah.
I believe you're 100% right, yes.
Or vice versa, yeah, but, geez, that was a tough beat, and I thought that was a tough cause. I thought the Powers Court was dominant, you know, in that tough loss that, you know, they DQ'd him. But, guys, speaking of the Chicago Racing, geez, it's just tough how Chicago Racing is suffering right now. I mean, there's not really that much coverage. Usually that's the millions are always, so highly anticipated. But, geez, the city of Chicago is struggling with the racing.
Yeah, the whole state of Illinois is struggling so badly. And yeah, I guess Hawthorne is a racetrack that looks like and is the same era as Saratoga. It's never been the quality of Saratoga, or at least in the last 50 years hasn't been the quality of Saratoga. But it was a beautiful old racetrack, and that its existence is threatened because the legislature just can't seem to get their act together to support racing in any. Right.
We got to get the casinos, because the casino is really I don't know if you guys might disagree with me, but I love what Frank Stronach has done, the Gulfstream. Yeah, I know there's not that much seating to it, but it's a tremendous facility. If you go with your friends or your girlfriend and she doesn't want to come to the races, you know, you could catch a couple races while she goes out shopping with her girlfriend. I think it's a tremendous thing what they're doing with Gulfstream. And as you can see, the fairgrounds has casinos. I mean, I could go on and on. You guys know that already, but I hope the state of Chicago, Illinois, gets the casinos so the racing can get back to what it is. Because, I'm a huge fan of the Arlington Million, and just to see that there's nothing really advertised really about it. It's a great facility. What do you guys think?
But Jay, you know, you just mentioned about Gulfstream with the facility. I can't disagree. I can't agree with you any more than the statement you just made. And actually, one of the successes of Gulfstream is actually is actually crippling another track. Gulfstream's success is crippling Monmouth Park because a lot of the horsemen that were going to Monmouth Park in the summer have decided to race all year round at Gulfstream because the racing has been good, competitive, and it's been good for them to be there with the weather. And that's one of the main reasons. I mean, Peter Walder used to go down there with a big string every year, you know, just to name one of them. But many of the trainers, Bill, have stayed in Gulfstream year-round than rather to shipping to Monmouth, and we all know how bad Monmouth is hurting. All you have to do is look at their fields.
That's a tough blow, unfortunately, on Monmouth. But like Mike Nyman and Rip Bowen, they're doing a fabulous job down there. I mean, like, and unfortunately now, you know, Tim went down to take care of Santa Anita, and I think the race is going to improve in Santa Anita. I can't say it's going to be what Goldstein is, but I think it's going to improve a little bit, you know, more at Santa Anita. But the only problem with Santa Anita is they race so long, you know. But who knows? Maybe the race, I think, could improve, you know, down at the Great Race Place. But, like, if you guys want to talk about some races, let's talk about some races.
Well, you know, just to stay with that idea for a minute, I guess to use a business term, there's going to be a shakeout in the next 10 years. There's going to be a shakeout, and some racetracks are going to run shorter meets than the long live meets, and it's probably going to gravitate towards some huge geographical circuits, and the rest of them are going to watch simulcasting, I would think, because there's just simply not enough horses to go around, and that's why you're seeing small fields in a lot of places, California and New Jersey in particular, and I guess it's just the natural way of things that we'll see how it shakes out, and you know, the people who innovate the most will stay alive, but it'd be a shame to lose racing at the Jersey Shore. It'll be a shame to lose racing in the second largest city in the country, a city that just absolutely loves every type of sport. So to lose Chicago would be terrible. But you know, no one's really asking our opinion. But it would be a shame if they couldn't get their act together. Let's talk about that card. There's three races we should talk about, right? There's a whole good card. We don't have time to talk about everything, but there's the Secretariat, the Beverly D, and the Arlington Million. So, Chad, you want to talk a little bit about the Secretariat, which is for three-year-olds?
Yeah, well, the Secretariat, I am shocked with just the small field on the Secretariat. I mean, like, it's usually the Secretariat is, like, a really nice, huge field, but, like, it looks like Oscar's performance, I don't know if he scared the field away, but, like, Roman Hope has really done very well with that horse and, like, gotten it back on track. So I wouldn't be surprised for Oscar's performance to run another magnificent performance. With that said, you know, I mean, I really think that is the horse to beat. There's a horse that I like later on. Christoph Clement's horse.
Let's just stay with Oscar Performance for a little bit. I mean, this is the time where European horses come in. I guess Oscar Performance does his best running in the front. There's one other horse in there who's run at Laurel Park and in Arlington International and has run on the front a couple of times. Maybe we'll give him some sonic boom. Maybe the two of them will match each other up, and maybe a mile and a quarter is beyond the scope. But I guess then after that, you just have to look at the Europeans. And I guess Aidan O'Brien has a horse, but it's hard to tell how good they are, right? It's Mike, do you have any opinion on the Secretariat?
You know what, Bill? I was just going to say, like Jay said, but I was actually going to make a joke of it and say, you, me, and Mark D'Lo have been betting against Oscar Performance for the last two or three times because we think there was too much speed in the race and someone was going to run him into the ground, and he's had the easiest of leads. And to be honest with you, I don't know if Sonic Boom is going to run with him or sit off him. If he sits off of him, I could see him just like Jay said, running away and hiding again. Brian Lynch has done a super job, and Jose Ortiz knows him better than anybody, and I thought he was going to get beat the last two or three times that he ran, and I was wrong all three.
Yeah, I was too. And he's earned $1.5 million with us. We're not rooting against him, but us thinking he had no chance. So I guess
exactly.
He doesn't need our backing. Jay, we'll move on a little bit to the maybe we'll get to the horse that you're talking about, but we'll move on to the Beverly D. The Beverly D is the 10th race at Arlington, and again, it's an hour later because it's for Midwest, so it's late in the day for our fans who are watching here on the East Coast. But the Beverly D is named after the owner of Arlington's wife, Beverly Duchessois. And it's a grade one, and it draws some tremendous horses. But I guess the one that's really getting most interest is a horse who's ran so well in Argentina and has made the transition from Argentina to the United States, winning at Churchill Downs and Arlington Park, Donna Brugia. Do you think she's for real, or do you think this is where she finally stubs her toe?
I think she's actually for real. Looking at all her last race, that I think it was at Indiana Down. I like that performance, and the jock stays on. So, which I mean, Ignatius, that's pretty a good sign. You know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people probably try to get on that horse, but I think she's sitting pretty nice. She looks really nice, but the cedar's going to be tough, though.
Well, the cedar is for Chad Brown, and Chad Brown is tough in almost anything, everywhere he runs. But the cedar has disappointed the last couple of times. I don't know what to make. I don't know what to make of her form.
I think she's just watching her race. She's a tough filly to handle, it looks like, you know. And, I mean, all her races have not been bad. I mean, Anna Delacour, she's another good trainer out there. And under the people.
No. I'm sorry, guys. Mike, I wanted to get you involved here in this other Chad Brown house, Chad Brown horse, Grand Jeté, if I'm pronouncing that right.
I was thoroughly impressed with his last race at Belmont, that being a small six-horse field, but he looked like he got about as much trouble as a horse can get into, and Joel Rosario rode him with complete confidence, and in a hand ride went by a Bar of Gold, who came back and ran an incredible fourth the other day in a stake race at Saratoga. But Bill, you and I were together for Hawksmoor's last race in the New York Handicap, and I was visually impressed with Hawksmoor's race. Quidara came back and just got beat, in the. To Lady Eli, which was another controversial, maybe a herding incident, you know, down the stretch, and Quidora ran a great race under Junior Alvarado. I think it's a wide open race. I think maybe Hawksmoor could be tough on a lead, but I like this Grand Jet also. I'm very, very interested to see if Grand Jet can take the next step forward.
Yeah, she's done nothing wrong since she got to the United States. She ran in second class races throughout her life, and as a 3-year-old in France, none of the big races, and kind of run at some second level tracks. But boy, once Chad Brown got her, she's done nothing wrong. And it'd be interesting to see whether you get a square price on her or not against some of these Europeans. But this, from a gambling standpoint, this is an extremely difficult. Extremely difficult race because it's the European form. You don't know how good they are. And as Jay said, we have an idea how good the U.S. horses are, but you don't know how good the foreign horses are, and they could dominate the race. I guess the same goes for the Arlington Million, which is wide open. So the Arlington Million is the 11th race. It's $1 million race. And it's funny, when David Donk said that he won the race in 1995, I guess $1 million was significantly more in 1995 than it is now, although... Still plenty. What are your thoughts on that? Have you got a chance to handicap that race?
Let's see. I'm pretty amazed with 10-1 on Ascend. who's coming turning back really quick. I guess Graham must have felt that he's doing very well. The Visadero. Of course, it's really tough for us to figure out. But it doesn't run a bad rate. Kasaki is a nice horse on this side, of course. I'm actually, I'm going to look at Duval, because he didn't run bad last year here. So, I mean, he likes the course. I mean, we're not getting a great price, 7-2, but, like, there's some upside.
Yeah, he was only beaten a half length in this race. Deville was only beaten a half length in this race last year. So you can kind of figure they targeted this a little bit. And, you know, we could, as a four-year-old, maybe he comes back stronger than he was last year and gets the $1 million this year.
Yeah. I mean, are you guys looking at Beach Patrol? Because I'm actually going to toss him out, because I think he's always in the money.
It's a wide open race, and I guess we didn't even mention Mike the Pizza Man, who's coming back and trying to win it again. He's an 8-year-old. His last race wasn't good. I thought his last race he had an opportunity to win that race, and he didn't. He was only beaten a length and a half, but it didn't look like he was that interested going to the race, going to the stretch rather. So maybe his best days have passed him. I hope not. He's a local favorite in Chicago, and people will be rooting for him.
I'm going to go with the horse that rounded out my exacta last year. If you remember, I loved Mondalisti last year, Bill, and I picked him on the show, and I gave everyone the exacta. I had Mondalisti over Casaqui, and I'm going to look for Casaqui to come back this year and win the Arlington Million. If anybody wants to look, Jay, just go back and look at his last race. He stumbled badly at the start and was bumped in mid-stretch and had an awful trip as even money favorite. And I'm looking for him to rebound in a big way and take down the Arlington Million for Ignacio Correas, who's 20, who needs no introduction, 29% you know, at the meet and 17% on the year, and James Graham. I kind of like this horse. I like the way he's going into the race, and I like the way his numbers. I think he's coming back to his best race, which is going to be on Saturday.
I think James suits Kasky very well. I mean, last race he did, I remember he did stumble, and he's ran decent numbers on the Arlington course. So, I mean, we're getting the price. So, not a bad way to go.
Yeah, you should demand a price on whoever you get in that race, because it's so wide open, and Mike, I think you'll get a square price on Kasaki to avenge his loss last year, and then that may be the way to go.
And he's never been off the board at the distance, Bill, at a mile and a quarter. He's ran seven times, 3 wins, 3 seconds, and a third. So he's definitely your exacta triple and superfecta horse. If you don't like him to win, you have to use him.
Right. Well, I guess I'll try to watch it from Saratoga. I'm going up this weekend, and this is kind of the lost weekend at Saratoga. The four-star Dave, they try to make it a big race. In my opinion, it's kind of never really caught on as being a top-notch stakes race, and it's kind of the lull between the Whitney and the Alabama, I guess, right? And it's I don't know what they can do. There's so many weekends. You can't have a big race on every weekend, but this weekend is a little lackluster up at Saratoga, but we'll do our best to have some fun anyway, right?
Well, that race always comes up pretty. It's in the middle of the. It's in the middle, so like it the Arlington Million takes a lot away from that race, you know. So
right.
Maybe I guess if I, of course, I wouldn't force you to change it. I think they should have it at that program. But I guess, you know, it bangs heads with a million cards. So that's why it's always that the Saratoga card that weekend is always like a, you know, okay. It's not, you know, like you said this upcoming races last week was a Whitney, and then the final week is Alabama. So, you know. But nonetheless, that's a decent deal.
I hope they don't run
okay.
things. Jay, were you listening to the part of the show we had when we said we hope they don't run the races right on top of each other like they tend to do, like
yeah,
they did last week
with
the West Virginia Derby?
Yeah, I really hope they don't do that. I really hope they don't do that. And it's funny just to say that to you guys, because like, why, prior to when I was at Saratoga, I noticed like the television is outside, you know, where you can put your chairs in the picnic areas. Basically, now they only show Saratoga. You know, before they used to show Monmouth. Yeah, they used to show Monmouth and Saratoga. So now, if you actually want to go and see, you know, because I remember like when they was doing the Haskell before, they used to actually like make a big thing about the Haskell, but like they didn't do that at all this year, you know. When I was there, you know, you had to go
inside. There was a time when they folded the Haskell right into the Saratoga card, right? They used to have one or two simulcasts they focused, they highlighted during the year. Do you remember that, Mike, how long ago that was when they used to kind of add?
I remember when Pete Bruce wanted, yeah.
Right. They used to, and Chuck McGahey's horse won it one year with that, or ran well in it. Coronado Quest, I guess, that was like the highlight race of Saratoga. They decided not to really have a stakes race on that day to compete against it, and to have that be the race. Well, you know, let me open the lines for see if we have another caller. 646-716-4442. 646-716-4442. And maybe we'll wrap it up a little bit early tonight because we've had a good call with Dave Donk. As we said, the racing is not as interesting as Saratoga this week. Guys, I was thinking about trying to think of some of the best rides that had come off, you know, nationwide, countrywide, in historic rides. I kind of came up with two, and I'd like your thoughts on it. One was Angel Cordero's ability to get Bold Forms to go a mile and a half in the Belmont, which just seemed to be, you know, way beyond the horse's scope. And Angel Cordero kind of faked him out and made him think he was working out half the race, and then didn't drop him to the rail until he was on the turn, and he managed to just hold on. And the other one, I guess, was Bill Shoemaker's ride on Ferdinand in the Derby. And, you know, that was a great ride, but it was, I think it really became national prominence because they had an isolated camera on Ferdinand. And that was one of the first times they decided to do that on ABC, which is an isolated camera, and you saw them go in between. Any thoughts on that or any others come to mind?
I thought Cordero's ride on Bold Forms was absolutely a thing of beauty, and I could watch that race. It still gives me chills to see the way he rode Bold Forms. He was the master, and he proved it that day.
Yeah, I mean, that horse didn't want to go a mile and an eighth, never mind a mile and a half.
I thought Shoemaker's ride on Trinidad was excellent, superb, magnificent.
Yeah, I think that ride, Shoemaker's ride, from coming from behind on Ferdinand and going in and out and weaving and stopping and going, I think the isolated camera on that really made the public realize, you know, how something can go wrong at any given time and any second, and you need kind of the perfect trip to get to win coming through like that. And I think the fact that they had an isolated camera on him, you know, helped solidify that in everyone's memory. But I also tend to think Blames. Now, he just passed away. He was just inducted into the Hall of Fame. I just can't think of his name. He escapes me. Who rode Blame to beat Senyata?
Gomez.
I mean, that was pretty crafty too. I mean, he saved every inch he could with Blame, and he held on just by an inch. But I'm afraid if I make that a great ride, Senyata fans will burn me at the stake, right?
No, it's okay. I mean, the guy fired David before I got hurt. I'm sure he was in 100%. You know, and he really gave blaming magnificent ride. I mean, he just gave everything, every ounce of energy that he probably had left in his body. And he was one of those strong finishers, Gogo. So strong, you know. When I watch Irad Ortiz, I think of Derek Gomez because, man.
Yeah, well, you know, Garrett Gomez was tremendously talented. I guess we didn't watch him all the time because he rode in New York only part of his career. But as you say, as far as strong finishers go, he was right up there. Let me give the number out one more time.
Yeah, Bill, I'm going to give you a race to go back, and you could talk about this one on Monday afternoon. Go back and watch the and Jay. I don't know if you remember it, but I remember it as if it happened yesterday. Go back and watch the 1996 Kentucky Derby and watch the ride that Jerry Bailey gave Grindstone when Cavanier looked home, and just watch the ride that Bailey made from 15th place to win the race. I mean, if you still ask Bob Baffert today what his worst beat was in racing, it still stands as his toughest loss was the day that he got beat in the Derby by Dean Wayne Lucas and Jerry Bailey with Grindstone. If you watch that race and watch the way Bailey timed that ride, I'm telling you, it was even though I didn't have Grindstone that year, it was just a flawless ride by Jerry Bailey, who always seemed to be in the right place at the right time.
Right, right. All right, I'll go back and look at that. I guess also I think of Cordero's ride on Kodex for Dwayne Lucas, beating Genuine Risk, you know, when he floated her wide, kind of intimidated and herded her all the way through the stretch. You know, I guess we're talking about great race efforts, too, and I tend to think I have to, obviously before Monday, I have to freshen up to make sure I know exactly which it was, but Forgo wearing down Honest Pleasure in the Marlboro Cup is still kind of amazing to me.
Yes, I think that was with 130, right, or 132 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was carrying a huge impost. He came from way behind. Honest Pleasure was a solid racehorse, and it was just sheer will on his part to get up way wide somehow. And it just—I don't know if it was the optics of it because he was so wide on the racetrack, but it seems like he was making up four strides for every stride of Honest Pleasures in the last three jumps, and he just got there. You know,
I guess another one was probably Azari's 2-year-old Breeders' Cup race had to be one of the most eye-opening performances I've seen in a Breeders' Cup.
You know, Arazi. Right.
Right.
I make the same mistake, too. I just had Pat Cannon, who's on the show all the time. I just had him watch that Sunday morning. We sat on his porch up in Saratoga, and of course, you know, always talking about horses. We spoke about that. And, yeah, Arazi's sweeping around the field in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Churchill Downs was you know, just mind-boggling.
1991, right? Yep.
It was so impressive that it made him the Kentucky Derby favorite, even though he hadn't really run very much before the Derby. I mean, that's
right off that race. That's right, Bill. Yep.
Yeah, people still remembered it. I guess you have four. You have Secretariat's run in the Secretariat's run around the first turn at Pimlico in the Preakness is still kind of amazing too.
Yeah.
Because he went so early. I guess before our time, you have Jiper and Rydan in the Travers, but none of us were old enough to remember that live. But have you ever seen that tape, Jay?
Yeah, I've got to see it. No, I've got to see it.
I mean, for our listeners, it was the Travers and Jiper and Rydan came out of the gate, and they never were for a mile and a quarter. They never were more than, you know, 4 inches apart. I think they raced head and head the entire way, which was you know just mind-boggling.
You know, it was interesting. I'm sorry. You know, it was interesting that you had Pat Cannon watch that race the other day. Was that if you looked at that, if you looked at the PTs of that race, you had Devil's Due was in there, Pine Bluff was in there. I mean, he beat some nice horses that day. Like he went by them like they were standing still.
Yeah, and the nice the nice sprinter from California, was it Bernstein or
Bertrando?
Bertrando, right, right.
Yep.
And you know, yeah, you're right. He did. He went by them all like they were standing still. It was almost he almost ran right on top of them. I guess another category might be training feats, and I guess Michael Dickinson coming back to win the Breeders' Cup with the Haas after off a what is it 2 year layoff is probably up there too, right?
I tell you, the Haas he still looks good. I was at Kentucky Horse Park. Man, he's a beauty. He's so sweet and gentle.
You saw him at the retirement.
Yeah.
But was
yeah.
it old friends, Jay?
No,
I never thanked you for that, Jay. You were going to try to get the people from old friends, and you did try to call me, but it was just. I think I was on the other line at the time.
Yeah, no problem. But I still have Michael's number, and we'll work out something on it. Like, we'll work something on it. Exactly. Michael, you'll see him up at Saratoga this week because he's still there. He was there last week, and I saw Michael. So the Haas, he's actually at Kentucky Horse Park. That's where him and Funny Side is there. And they're both doing fantastic. But, if anybody hasn't been to Old Friends out of Kentucky, you guys should really go out there. It's really great, you know. It's nice. They've got a lot of good ones. Private Zone is there now. Awesome Gem. Or Emblem. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Let me give the number out one more time before we wrap it up in case anybody wants to call. 646-716-4442. So 646-716-4442.
Well, Bill, you alluded earlier as to one of the greatest feats in racing before introducing Dave Donk had to be Woody Stevens winning five consecutive Belmonts. We were always joking about it. The diehard racetrackers, Jay, we were always saying, what has more of a shot of getting beat, DiMaggio's hit streak or Woody Stevens' five Belmonts? And I think Woody Stevens' five Belmonts is going to be around for a long time.
He's unfortunately, this time. You know, things are meant to end, but that will never happen.
Well, you know, it was more unlikely than it is now because most barns were limited to 40 horses back then. Woody Stevens didn't have 400 horses. He didn't have 200 horses. So, you know, he looked down a shed row and you know, out of 40 horses, maybe he had 23-year-olds, colts. And he managed to get one of them to win the Belmont every year. Because now you have some mega stables, and you could probably, you know, peg someone as being the long distance one or just in numbers. But back then it was really difficult to have that kind of dominance. And, you're right. That was just a tremendous feat.
And to go back to one of the greatest races of all time, Bill, you have to put there in the top five had to be. The Ali Dara Firm Belmont Stakes. I mean, you know, what more of a thrilling race would you see where they hooked at the top of the stretch and were noses apart to the wire? I don't remember seeing a race that exciting. You know, where two horses actually gave two horses that in a race where there shouldn't have been a loser.
Well,
right.
I'll give you one. It's not that old, but I would have to say Sunday Silas and Easy Goer. That was some memories.
Yeah, painful ones for those of us from the East Coast who rooted for Easy Goer.
Right.
I had the pleasure of interviewing Steve Cawthon for the show, and I asked him about that because Chick Anderson, the announcer, said Ali Daw puts a head in front,
right.
and to this day I've never seen him put a head in front. I think it was anticipation on Chick Anderson's part, not to criticize him, but I think, you know, he was expecting he was going to put a head in front. And I asked Steve Cawthon, and he was too much of a gentleman. He said, well, he may have gotten ahead of us, but he never got a head in front. You know, I don't think he wanted to say that he never got in front. But that was a firm's just sheer determination and sheer will not to be passed, which was, you know, something you can't teach and something that's in them. And you know, he just you're right. That's got to be right up there with well, certainly importance. It's right up there with any race. But, well, I hope this conversation goes that way Monday night. You know, I hope it's not just a debate over you know who is the greatest horse. I hope it rounds out, and I'll do my best to kind of add those, you know, those type of things for people who should know. And I'll add Bailey's ride on Grindstone to the you know, to the mix there.
Yeah, just watch the race, Bill, before you talk about it, and just watch. He's actually 15th place, and you could, if you YouTube it or Google it, or you could actually watch it. I mean, you know, you never thought he would get to the wire first.
Right. So I guess you have two opposite ends there, right? You have someone who was so far back you couldn't believe he got up in time, and Quadari had somebody on the lead who you couldn't believe could last,
right,
just with bold force, right, because the horse didn't want to go, and that's kind of what this game is all about, right? Reaching
and I agree
top
with
ones.
You. It's a four-go race with Honest Pleasure. It never looked like he was going to get up.
Yeah, the only time he looked like he won was at the wire, you know, like he could have won was at the wire.
Correct.
So we'll try to spread the word up there on Monday. I don't know. I saw Justin Nicholson over the weekend, and he said that they're happy with how the sales have gone for EquestriCon, but of course they're hoping for a big walk up, you know, big last minute walk up of people who haven't decided to go yet, but if they hear about it, will go. So I hope it goes well. I'm looking forward to it, obviously.
Is it a Monday Tuesday thing, Bill, or just Monday?
It's Monday, Tuesday, and the convention is both days, Monday and Tuesday. The panels are Monday and Tuesday, but I think there's only three on each day. So I think I'm the last one on Monday, which I guess is better than being early because the races will be on Monday. They'll be competing against the races. And then Tuesday, I guess they'll have no competition with the races, and maybe they'll have a bigger crowd on Tuesday. But, you know, it's an audacious attempt. And I hope they succeed at it because I know they put an awful lot of work into it. I can see how much work they're putting into it and how much you know how much time they had. And my panel will be moderated by Matt Carruthers from TVG, and I had an opportunity to meet him and introduce myself to him this weekend. So that's good. You know, he'll know who I am, and I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean it's you know, it's a different era, and it's another way of trying to get people in, you know, to see just how great this game is. It's just another, you know, just another aspect of trying to show to people that this is a great sport.
I hope for the first time that they really get a good turnout, and so that way it continues on. You know, because like you said, Bill, already they put in a lot of effort in into this.
Yeah, I guess if you know, millions of people can dress up as comic characters, and a million people can dress up at SantaCon, and we can have a EquestriCon, people can, you know, come and talk about horses all the time, as if we don't do that all the time anyway. But you know, we can meet people, other people, other like-minded people.
Meet and greet. Yeah.
Another great, you know, one of my favorite, you know, when you talk about the Kentucky Derbies, one of my favorite derbies was 1988, watching Winning Colors, the filly, just annihilate the field in the Derby. You know, she was a special filly too, and that was the Lucas era.
Yeah,
and how about you know, just look at his track record. Look at all the assistant trainers that worked under Wayne Lucas, under his tutelage and guidance, that came back. I mean, Todd Pletcher, George Weaver, Mark Henning, you know, Mike Maker, Dallas Stewart. You just go down the list. I mean,
Karen,
I mean, what a great job! What a great role model he's been in horse racing.
Right.
I love going to the Oklahoma train track and just seeing the colt still get up on the horse, on his horse. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's still on the pony. Yep.
Yeah.
You know what I will mention, and Jay and Mike, it may not be so interesting for our listeners because they may not know what I'm talking about, but you guys certainly do. Sunday morning, I saw somebody drive a car on the backstretch down the chute that goes onto the track, right next to the concession stand there where you buy your breakfast.
Oh, really?
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you know, everybody started yelling, and obviously the guy didn't know he was doing anything wrong or he wouldn't have been doing it, but it was so
right.
dangerous. I mean, it was unbelievable. And then he tried to make it – then he tried to back up, and then people were yelling at him. Then he tried to go ahead and make to the right and the left. And I don't know who wasn't paying attention and let that happen, but it was so dangerous. And, you know, finally, I was one of the guys who was closer to him, and I just screamed, just stop moving, you know, like – because
right.
he panicked a little bit, you know. He was driving
right.
a Cadillac.
Yeah, sure.
And – You know. Okay, whatever mistake you've made. Just stop. Don't move any further. You know, because it could just get out of hand. There were riders scrambling and people yelling at them, and you know the Pinkertons were running over. But it was just like at some point you just have to stop moving, and you know that way you know you're not going to hit anybody. But it was so surprising, and as you say, because. Jay, you made me think about it. Is you know all those trainers are up on their horses and everybody's yelling and screaming, and it's just. It had all the possibilities of a disaster, but thankfully it wasn't. Let's give one more shout out. I don't think we need any guest calls right now. I think 646-716-4442. I want to thank David Donk for taking his time out and speaking with us, and he's got three winners already in Saratoga, which is nice. Jay, have you had any luck up there? Have you had any success, or are you finding it difficult?
I've had a little bit, you know, but like I said, the spot is always a spot. There's great value there. You just gotta do the best you can and handicap the best way you can. I've had some good days so far, you know. So I think it has is, you know, hopefully I can close it off with a bang. But it's always tough to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Just stay alive. We haven't gotten the torrential rains that we normally get up there this year. And you know, we've gotten some rain, but we haven't gotten wiped out. So I hope that continues, that the weather continues well for them, and they continue to do well, you know, business-wise. And we certainly hope the breakdowns stop, whatever, you know, whether it's just circumstance or whether it's just coincidence. We just certainly hope that stops one way or the other. But with that, guys, anything we've left out? Should we wrap it up a little early tonight?
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do, you're the host, Bill.
Let's give a shout-out, Bill, to Eddie Olachek.
Oh, yes.
Wishing him a speedy recovery. You know, he's battling colon cancer.
Yeah, Eddie Olchek, the former hockey player who's a big supporter of racing and does a lot of racing. I guess that just broke this week, that news, right? So he's, of course, he has our prayers and, our support.
Yeah, let's. He's great for the game. He does a great job with NBC. NBC Sports, and we wish him a speedy recovery, and hopefully he's back on the set real soon.
And with that, maybe we'll play the music and be out, and everybody will pay attention to Chicago this week. And maybe we'll be able to talk about some, next week we'll come back and we'll talk about the Alabama and see who's coming for the Alabama, and whether Songbird, Abel Tasman makes it in for the Alabama or not. All right, so thank you to my friends, Jay. Thank you to Mike Monroe.
Don't forget
thank
about Cassiquie in the Arlington Million, Bill. We're trying to go back-to-back winners for the racetrack of fans. We're going to go with Cassiquie.
All right, Cassiquie in the Arlington Million on Saturday. Thanks, everyone. I'll play the music and we'll be out. Thanks, all.
Take care, Jay. Good night, Bill.
Have a good night, guys.
tracker. This is what I love.